This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega.
Elena, you tell us about the primaries. Give us the results, please. The midterms have been one long crazy ride.
Another Wednesday, another primaries roundup here on The Takeaway, and Elena Schneider, campaigns reporter for Politico, is here. Hi, Elena.
Hey, Tanzina.
Did you catch our little present for you?
I did. I was a little taken aback there, but glad to be here.
We hope you like Eric Clapton. We figured you needed your own branding, so that's what our fantastic team made for you. But let's get to the news here. It was a night of firsts across the country for Democrats. Let's start with these. First up, Christine Hallquist, and we'll be talking to her in just a few minutes. She's the first openly transgender person to win a nomination for governor. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
So she's going to be the first transgender candidate to be nominated for a governorship. She was nominated on Tuesday. This is a huge deal. We've got transgender candidates who are really breaking barriers this cycle. Obviously, Danica Rome in Virginia is the first to represent on a state legislative level. And look, this is a very big night for her, but she does face an uphill battle. The governor there, Phil Scott, has seen his numbers decline a little bit, and he's certainly become a little more vulnerable. But I think that she's in a good position to potentially give him a run for his money. But she certainly wasn't the only one with firsts last night. Jahana Hayes, she was a teacher. She won the National Teacher of the Year Award back in 2016. She was able to take out a longtime local politician who was actually endorsed, granted in the final days, but by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which was their first endorsement in 8 years for a Democrat. And so I think that that's another place where, look, Democratic primary voters are interested in women, they're interested in people of color, and they're interested in sort of much more progressive focused candidates. And so she'll be the first African-American woman and the first African-American Democrat to represent the state of Connecticut in Congress. And then also actually in Minnesota to replace Keith Ellison, we have the first Somali-American woman who's going to be representing his district out of Minnesota. So we've got a lot of history made last night.
Now let's talk about Wisconsin's first congressional district. It's Paul Ryan's district, and we know he's retiring, so it's a big race open on both sides. Two candidates here, Randy Bryce, one for the Democrats, nicknamed Iron Stash, which I think is fantastic, while the former Paul Ryan staffer Brian Stile won on the Republican side. What's this race looking like?
Well, look, this is still a tough race for Democrats. This is a traditionally Republican seat, and I'm sure that Paul Ryan is going to do everything in his power to make sure that his seat is passed on to the candidate who he wants. That being said, Randy Bryce has really embraced this moniker of Iron Stash. He really has caught fire online, and he's raised an unprecedented amount of money. He's raised $6.3 million. Granted, he's burned through a good chunk of that, but, you know, look, he's going to make this a race, and this shouldn't be a race. So this sort of adds to the longer list of districts that Republicans are going to have to contend with and spend resources in that ideally they wouldn't have to, but because of candidates like Randy Bryce, who has become, you know, just really popular online, has really become sort of an object of the Democratic fascination because he's in Paul Ryan's district, it's going to make Republicans spend resources there.
Well, and then we've also got news from last week's races in Kansas, finally, that Governor Chris Collier has conceded to Kansas Secretary of State and Trump ally Chris Kobach. Tell us about this, because Chris is a very controversial figure, if you will.
Absolutely. He was made famous by his support for Donald Trump, and in particular, his sort of hardline views on voter fraud. He spearheaded the commission that's basically been decommissioned on voter fraud. Look, he's somebody who the president feels really close to, and that's why the president decided to wade into this Republican primary, much to the chagrin of a lot of Republicans on the ground who hoped that the president would stay out of this race so that they could get through Jeff Collier, and the incumbent governor, somebody who they felt would be, you know, much more comfortable in holding on to that seat. But with Chris Kobach winning here, look, it's another race that really jumps on the map. And it also is, again, sort of proof of the power of Trump's endorsement in Republican primaries. he's really effective in rallying his base around a candidate. And look, that doesn't necessarily guarantee their victory in the general election. Everyone remembers the Alabama special election. Clearly, that didn't work out for Roy Moore. But look, I think that it shows that his power of rallying his base is still super effective. And it also gives us an indication as to why members of Congress and Senate candidates maybe aren't willing to put too much distance between themselves and the president because they see his power within his own base.
So it kind of seems like this primary season has really shown us like how divergent the two parties are right now. I mean, going back to Minnesota, where we had Ilhan Omar, who could be one of the first Muslim women elected to Congress, and at the same time, we're seeing a Kris Kobach.
Right. We're seeing the polarization of these parties play out really sharply in the kinds of candidates that they want to elect. The same thing down in Georgia in electing Stacey Abrams and one of the most conservative candidates down there as well. So look, I think that this is going to continue to play out because both bases show up and have shown up in the primaries this cycle.
A quick check-in on the East Coast now. We had Connecticut with a gubernatorial primary. Ned Lamont easily won that Democratic nomination and Bob Stefanowski narrowly won on the Republican side. What's happening in Connecticut? Connecticut is usually solidly blue, but with the outgoing Democratic Governor Dan Malloy, that might not be the case this time around.
Well, you've named it, Dan Malloy. This is he's a Democratic governor who's exiting on pretty low approval ratings. He's somebody who the state feels like has not done a very good job economically for the state. And so he's really put this state in a dangerous position for Democrats to hold. And look, Republicans are not without some footholds in the Northeast. Obviously, Charlie Baker is a Republican governor in Massachusetts. Larry Hogan, Republican governor of Maryland. Those are both pretty solidly blue states, but there is still an interest in voting for an executive who is Republican and maybe is a little more conservative on fiscal issues. So Republicans have a real shot in Connecticut, in part because of Dan Malloy's seriously low approval rating.
Elena Schneider, campaigns reporter for Politico and one of the few to have her own takeaway soundtrack. Thanks for being with us as always.
Thanks so much for having me.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Babbel, offering a language program that uses interactive dialogue and speech recognition technology to teach a new language like Spanish, French, or Italian. Babbel is available in the App Store or online at babbel.com.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.